So it's my honor to be able to put the spotlight on a colleague of mine. He too is still alive, and he too is in the room. And this is just going to be fun to see him squirm. I think when I walked in the room, I had another session I had some duties with earlier this morning. I walked in, it was very hot in here. And I thought, wow, there must be some others who are squirming and warming up and keeping the BTUs up here. Anyway, so it's a great honor for me to draw attention to an individual, Dr. Ken Sutta. He's also with the Agricultural Research Service, part of the research unit that I'm in. My co-authors, Kristen Beam, who's up here in the front, and our research leader, John Sadler. Ken is an agricultural engineer, and so you would think, well, maybe he wouldn't be coming to these meetings very often, but he actually has come to quite a few of these Tri-Society meetings over the years, and it's in part because of that title of where he is a giant, his domain of being a giant in this precision agriculture. He and I actually stepped onto the scene when precision agriculture was just kind of being born about 30 years ago, and started as scientists together, our career as scientists, and we'd like to really kind of just focus on some of the tremendous impact that his work has had as this kind of emerging science has been. First, I'd like to start with some words that I think kind of represent, or short phrases that represent who he is and his contribution. And the first is he's on the go. Ken had a sense that if you could sense it, he was going to sense it and sense it and sense it, okay? He's an agricultural engineer with a special training with sensors and developing sensors and integrating sensors. And so the whole technology of precision ag has been quite obviously dependent upon computer and electronics, and that is the face of Ken. And so he's... And it's not just sensing it, but it's recognizing that sensing doesn't do any good unless you can kind of map it. And in order to map it, you got to be able to go on the go. And so it's all about taking sensors and putting it into motion so that you could collect information to be able to develop maps. The second phrase that kind of comes to mind is this data to decisions. And I'm going to be highlighting that here towards the end. But it's not just data collection. And a lot of people who got into precision ag early on were so enamored by the sensors and what you could collect, they kind of lost sight of the fact that, you know, there needs to be a purpose with that. There needs to be something you're taking that to. And I think that wasn't Ken's problem at all. He understood that it needed to be data to decisions. The third thing that comes to mind is trees and the forest. Some people are great, look at an individual tree and describing it well. Some people are great at the forest level. Very few people are able to do both and have a perspective on science and technology that can kind of be at both ends and understand both of those things. And Ken Sutta has been really has demonstrated that as a part of his career. And then the final phrase or word that kind of comes to mind is he's Mr. Integration. It's data fusion. It's not just taking one piece of information. It's pulling all these different pieces of information together and trying to build relationships in a way, feeding back into that data and decisions, kind of the second one up there. So with that, I'd like to then kind of talk about these three different areas of the impact of science and technology that Ken has had. First, talk about it from the standpoint of proximal soil sensing. The second is to talk about it in terms of crop sensing, and then more of the data interpretation and decision support. And can I give a few examples in each of these three areas? First, proximal soil sensing. His career started a long time ago. In fact, color photography wasn't even around when Ken started his career. It was black and white only at that point. And he's on top of a straddle device, straddler. It's 40 feet of span to be able to get over large plots to be able to minimize or completely remove any kind of compaction. And so you So this device was actually used as a part of putting instrumentation on. And during this early part of the career, actually, we actually got to color photography during the same stage. But this is that same device, and over tillage plots and things to be able to put different instrumentation. In this particular case, we have a penetrometer that's also instrumented with near-infrared spectrometry, one of the first to be able to kind of look at multiple things at once. This is that data fusion kind of thing happening very early on in his career, a pioneer in this type of thinking in terms of what needed to happen. That near-infrared sensor system actually was work that stemmed from his PhD work at University of Illinois, where he was taking near-infrared to look at soil organic carbon and soil moisture, and again, on the go, and being able to do that on the go, and providing the engineering to be able to do that and prototyping that. And there's a number of industries that have tapped into that early work that Ken did to develop other sensors over the years. Early in the 1990s, after Ken and I started working together, we started working with this soil electrical conductivity. So this is bulk soil electrical conductivity, and this is one of the first sensors that was put out there, and it's made by a company called Geonix. And very quickly, we realized this was a pretty important piece of sensing to be able to start to look at soil properties without having to put anything into ground, so we could do that on-the-go type sensing. And so where Ken took this was, he said, you know, we got to integrate the what just came onto the scene, the GPS and the computer and the data, and being able to bring that data in together. And so really one of the first in the country, in the world, to be able to start putting these pieces together and demonstrate that we could very quickly collect data on the go in fields and create maps of those fields. And really demonstrated then, at the same time, yield maps that were coming from combine yield monitoring, and start looking at the relationship of soil properties at a very, very high resolution along with these yield maps, and starting to develop those relationships between grain yield and soil and landscape type properties. So that was a huge step forward in starting to elevate what we could do with precision agriculture science. This was pretty significant because at this time there was an individual that came over and visited with Ken and a few of the rest of us, and some of you may recognize this person. He's in the exhibit hall, and I hope he's not going to mind. I'm going to actually share what Eric Lund said. He said, before we launched Veris, we spent several months researching and evaluating various opportunities to fill a needed role in precision agriculture. One of the emerging technologies we were confident that we could develop and go to market with was soil mapping using soil electrical conductivity, or soil EC. I had read about the work in the field that Ken Suttet had been doing and requested a meeting. During that two-hour discussion, I learned a great deal with the promises and the pitfalls of soil EC mapping, and left the meeting confident that this technology could be the cornerstone of a soil sensing equipment company. I also left with the knowledge that collaborating with Ken Suttet would be a crucial part of our approach. And that company has been a very successful global company, and it really kind of launched with that conversation with Ken, because Ken was able to start to explain things relative to the electronics, what was happening in the soil, and really kind of an incubation moment for a company that has been very successful. Another example is soil strength sensing. And this is a penetrometer, and the early versions of this was just one probe in the ground at a time. But that wasn't sufficient because you can have a lot of short-scale variability. And so he built a penetrometer that had the five different penetrometers on it, and you could push this into the ground, and you're getting a lot of variation across the row by using this kind of device. But again, that wasn't good enough because he thought that's a point measurement. I want to be able to do this on the go so I can measure whole fields quickly. And so working with graduate students, they developed an on-the-go soil strength sensing equipment. It's kind of hard to see that, but on the front end of this blade, if I can, yeah, there it is. On the front end of that blade, there's basically some sensors, some kind of like probes at different depths. And then with that, you can actually develop soil strength or compaction type measurements at different depths and look at that relative to different landscape positions and start to see how, you know, soil compaction is spatially related. There's properties there that we can look at. And so how do you manage that, or how do you avoid having those kind of problems when you can know that that's not going to be the same across the field? From there, integration of many different types of sensors. So the Varis has a number of different models of sensors. In addition to that, we have soil near-infrared and penetrometer data. The whole idea is to kind of be able to start to put these different information streams of data together and start to look at those in a way to where we can fuse that information and start to really look at those things. And so when there's a campaign of going out and doing some fields, research fields or whatever, we would have, you know, sometimes a half a dozen different sensors going at the same time and kind of trying to see what each of those might be able to tell us. In the area of crop sensing, probably one of the best examples has been the crop canopy sensing, and there's some companies that come online with these. And we, working together, really kind of pushed forward how we might use that information and, of course, testing those sensors, testing the performance of those sensors, and then working with those sensors and being able to help develop the algorithms and testing those on farmers' fields. So that's been a significant part. Another example is that he was the first to actually design and help to put together, and it's a corn population sensor that basically measured the plants in the field. So you could see what the effect of stand was as you looked at that, and then related that population information with yield map information again to see how much of an effect stand was on your yield variation. Final thing is this data interpretation and decision support. And there's a number of different examples of kind of bringing this together to help develop bigger type understanding and relationships. Part of our research unit is to take production data and environmental quality data and merge that together as a part of cropping systems going forward. And so his work has been really quite critical in being able to do that into decision support tools and be able to look how we might take that information and those relationships of the past to be able to develop management zones. So much of the work that Ken has done, and even in some of the software development, it has been significant for developing management zones. Recently, some of that early work that we did was integrated in with the thinking and the approaches taken by DuPont Pioneer and their approach currently for helping to divide up the landscape into more refined characterization of the soil variation. It's a version of management zones. So that map there shows the USDA Sirgo soil map on the right, and it's a digital enhanced model of soil maps, or they call them eRUs, as a result of that work and some of the thinking that goes into that. Probably, and I wanted to end on this because this is pretty significant. So we just happened to be on the scene when the idea of yield mapping really got started. And in fact, this field here, we started research in 1990, and within a year or two, we had some prototype of some yield monitoring systems. And we started doing yield monitoring before anything commercially was available. Last week, we finished the 25th year of continuous yield monitoring on this field. And Ken had the vision of saying, we need to have this. We need to understand how yield maps can help us to understand those relationships between soil and crop and develop management practices that can stem off that. And that just shows up to 2014. But we've got the 25th year just last week of this continuous yield mapping on this field. That's not, actually this is actually translated into profitability maps for this case, but those are yield maps converted to that. And that was huge in part because it also gave us the opportunity up front to realize that yield is great data, but it also can be terrible data unless you clean it. And so very early on, he and his colleagues understood that we needed to have mechanisms for being able to clean that yield data. So they started developing the ideas and the algorithms and the principles for what has become Yield Editor. It's a yield map cleaning, yield data cleaning software that actually goes in and helps to automate the process of cleaning data and making it good. You don't want to make decisions based on bad data, and there's a lot of opportunity for bad data in yield data maps. And so it was huge. There's been over 10,000 downloads of this software. It's been used by a number of different companies. It's used and been downloaded in 45 states and over 75 countries. So this has had a huge impact on taking this data and making it higher quality data. I'm going to go through this quickly because I'm down to what, last minute? I think that's about where I got. So local, national, and international leadership. He was the founding director of the Missouri Precision Agricultural Center. He's done a number of things. Important service within the major society he's affiliated with, American Society of Agricultural and Biological Engineers. Most significant, he served as the 2014-2016 president of the International Society of Precision Agriculture. And has provided a really moving forward with that particular society, doing a lot of international work and helping to glue together some of the efforts that are done across the world. So points of a giant, I'll close with this. Ken's work with ECE for Precision Agriculture extended application of ECE tools way beyond the original value that it was intended to really with saline soils and the basis for a startup company. So it's had a huge impact. His integration of components for yield mapping and informed research into yield data cleaning was, which produced widely used Yield Editor, and that software alone is just, I mean, he's known quite well just for that particular contribution to precision agriculture. Ken's vision for integration of data from the multiple sources and continues to work with multiple proximal and contact soil sensors. It's about getting that information and getting it together, making those relationships and help you to inform you on the decisions going forward. Last, I put it, I kind of feel like Ken is Mr. EM. We talk about the G by E by M, and not so much the genetics, but you know, 30 years ago in the textbooks, there were a lot of things that were being said about management's important and environment's important, but it was really conceptual. Nothing was being taken to and done in a real way because we didn't have the tools in place to do that. And Ken's been that kind of person that really has defined or put into application the E by M part of this, the environment and the management and how we understand those relationships. And it's his work as an agricultural engineer that has been quite a pioneering and groundbreaking effort for being able to do that. And so, Ken, on a personal level, I want to thank you for the great work that you have been. It's been great as an agronomist and soil scientist to be matched up with a agricultural engineer and to be able to grow my career in leaning on the strengths that he has had, and feel like it has been a tremendous opportunity to hopefully make a difference for agriculture in general. Thank you very much, Ken.
Thank you, Neil. I want to make sure we save a little bit of time for discussion, but let's thank all of our speakers one more time, because that was outstanding. So if we go back to what the goals of this session were, the one I presented on was to highlight awards that could be nominated for, say, the Golden Goose Awards. But another key one is a lot of us who are maybe a little newer to the society, some of the graduate students, early career folks, aren't necessarily aware of all the impacts that have been made in the past, and are not necessarily aware that the impacts are currently being made to make the giants such as Norman Borlaug. Some of these people are still with us today. And what I really like as well is that different disciplines were highlighted and different ways to make impact, because it's not just by publishing science and nature papers necessarily that you make impact, right? You make impact through personal relationships, you make impact through service, you make impact through having one research finding that ends up in everybody's yard or everybody's farm. So I think it's really important that we're able to present this to people outside of just our society and outside of agriculture. And the question is how we do that. How do we carry that forward? And how do we have opportunities in future meetings? Because this was a special symposium organized for this one meeting to continue these discussions. And right now, that's not really clear to me. There's no real way to do that in the society unless a division chair decides that it's an important topic. So I guess I'll end there. Discussion. I'm sure there's some people who probably have some good philosophical points about what they heard. So I want to give opportunity for that.